You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
You know, it's funny. Radio, sports radio can be challenging when there's not much going on, and sometimes the All-Star break is deemed to be one of those times, right? Tonight and tomorrow, there'll essentially be nothing. Last couple nights, we had the Derby and the All-Star break. The Mariners are so interesting right now and on such a fun run, and training camp starting next week, that honestly, it does not feel that way at all. This hour is brought to you by Wayscar Ford. Justin, tomorrow we'll do our awards, a little mid-season awards for some Mariners.
Sounds good.
So, what do we want to ask the people? What's your question? What mid-season award category would they recommend?
Yeah, I think that's the thing, because you already know who the answers and the winners are going to be, because there's only a certain amount of players.
Right.
So what category best fits
each
player, perhaps?
Oh, that's kind of do it backwards. Like, mm-hmm. What award would you give to Sergio Romo?
Well, I don't know if I'd give Sergio an award.
Well, I'm sure there's something. You just got to search hard and, you know, far enough to find the right thing for Sergio. How about, what's his name? Steven D'Souza, or whatever his name was.
Oh, that's Steven Souza Jr.
Steven Souza Jr.
Oh, yeah. He announced his retirement yesterday?
Oh, that's too bad.
He's out of the game.
He only cost the Mariners 5 games this year.
Played 6 games for the Mariners.
He managed to cost them 5 of the 6. All right. Well, those are just a couple of options.
Players you can think of awards.
You go in other directions as well.
Yeah, any best ofs and any most impressives, okay. Those types of things are
some superlatives.
ESPYs are tonight. Are you guys willing to compete with them?
Oh boy,
ooh, that's a good question. Well, it depends who's hosting. It's going to be
Steph Curry.
Interesting. Who hosted last year?
I don't know.
Either.
the best ESPY host ever was Seth Meyers. I thought he did a great job. The worst was Rob Riggle. I went to the ESPYs a few years ago. It was awesome.
Is it
cool? It was so much fun. Yeah, it really was cool. I went down with our old boss here, the Silver Fox. It was tremendous. It was such a cool event and really great to be a part of. It was the only time I've ever been on a red carpet.
Interesting.
So wore a black suit and I kind of got all dressed up for it, right? And you're down there, you're in LA. It's by Staples Center, sort of in that area, LA Live. And as you walk up, and they're like, okay, you're going to be going on the red carpet. And then you find out there's two red carpets.
Oh, it's okay? Kind of like the ceremonial first
there's
pitch.
The
and the
real
first
red carpet for celebrities and the red carpet for everybody else to walk down and sort of like, hey, I'm walking on a red carpet, but not the red carpet. And at first, you kind of have this moment of like, oh, that's too bad. I kind of thought I was going to be on the red carpet. That's, you know, cool, but kind of a bummer. It's a little bit disappointing. It's not what you had in mind. And then you actually start experiencing it and you go, oh, thank God I'm not on the real red carpet.
Right.
It would be so awkward as nobody knows who you are. And everyone's just like, who's this guy?
And
there's
you're stopping
Steph Curry.
To pose for photos and no one's taking any pictures
right.
of
like,
you.
Thank God all the, like, you know, the normal people have their own sort of, you know, auxiliary red carpet so that you can just like take pictures and have fun and be goofy rather than like actually have the paparazzi.
You're over there
you.
Trying to get the best angle, explaining your eye twitch to them.
Exactly. I had lost some
Our left arm is sweating
right.
so
hey,
bad.
Why is one part of your suit dripping wet and the other side is dry as a bone? No. Take the picture from the other side. No. From the right, please, if you don't mind. Thanks, Maura. Thanks for bringing that up. I think I probably weigh 35 more pounds than I did when I was there. In any event,
that's
it
cool.
is a cool event.
Yeah, I've always wondered about the award shows, if they're actually worth it or if they just look good on TV and in person they're terrible.
No, it was really fun being there. And they had a band and like they made it pretty cool. And we had good seats. It was fun. And then the after party was fun, just kind of being around it. And of course, there's like, you know, tiers of after party. We weren't in the like, you know, elite of the elite, but like you're standing there and T.O. was just like in line at the buffet next to me. I was like, hey, what's up, T.O.? Like, I mean,
cool.
It was definitely a pretty funky, cool thing. All right. I only have a couple minutes. I'm sorry. I got distracted here. But I do want to go back to what Jeff Passan said regarding Julio. I'm sorry, regarding Juan Soto and the ability of the Mariners to trade for him and whether or not you want to pair him with a Julio Rodriguez for a few years to come. I think the easy answer is yes, right? I mean, I think we do want to do that. because he's incredibly talented, and I think I agree with what Ryan Divish said, that it legitimizes the franchise, not just in the minds of fans or the league, but in the minds of other players who at that point may be a little bit more willing and interested in coming to Seattle and taking your money. So what would it take?
It would cost Noelvi Marte, Emerson Hancock, Edwin Arroyo, Jared Kelnick, and Matt Brash. I think that's the size package, and maybe even more than that.
Jeff, I think I'd do that. Not just I think. Let me rephrase. I'd do that.
Yeah, because no starting pitchers' names are in there.
No current starters, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Well, you stopped before the part where I left it in that he did say.
But I would do that. I don't know how you don't do that. Now, if you start talking Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, guys that you need to win now, I can understand
That's why I don't think they're going to get it, because I think that Washington naturally and rightly would say we need one of those two.
And you say, okay, no, we need to win right now. Right? I mean, and maybe there's a way to balance this off by taking back some salary from Washington. That's been another part of the conversation. No, we're not going to give you George Kirby, but we'll take Patrick Corbin off your hands, who you don't want to keep paying. We'll pay for him. And now you've added depth to your rotation, and you now have six starters, and you've gotten Juan Soto without having to give up one of your guys. Yeah, I there are ways to get around that. There really are. There's ways. When Jerry's a creative guy, there's ways to make a deal. And the package that Jeff just mentioned, yeah, I'd do it. It would hurt, right? I don't want to give up Brash.
Well,
I don't want to give up Kelnick. I don't want to give up Marte. I don't want to give up Arroyo. I don't want to give up Hancock. I don't want to give up any of those guys. That's five prospects. That's a legit, that's a huge haul.
And I remember some outrage on the Brandon Williamson.
And by the way, I just disagree with Jeff. I don't think you're asking for more than that five. And I even honestly, I know it's crazy. I think that's a lot. I think that's more than the Nationals even asked for, and I think I'd do it. I still think I'd do it.
I think most people here would.
Yeah,
yeah. And I don't think I maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. You know, who knows exactly what they're looking for? But that feels like five prospects of that level. That seems excessive, even for Juan Soto, as great as he is. And I'd still do the deal because of what it would mean for the Mariners.
2.5 years.
Yeah, and but what it brings to your franchise, et cetera. Yeah. I think I'd probably get that done. All right, Jamie Erdahl is going to join us, talk a little football coming up here in 20 minutes. She's the new host of Good Morning Football. Before we do it, run through everything you need to know, including the easiest way for baseball to be better. It's next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, in case you were wondering, pitching in baseball is still real good, and it seems like it's getting better constantly. It was certainly the biggest thing on display yesterday at the All-Star Game. There were 20 total pitchers in the game, which, by the way, is a lot. They gave up, five total runs, but only two of them gave up any runs at all. That's just amazing. The American League ends up winning 3-2, nine consecutive All-Star Games now won by the AL. I do wonder if that will start to even out now that the DH is universal, and you would think the leagues would even out in general. I don't know. As for the Mariners reps, it was okay. Not too much to write home about. Julio went 0-2. France went 0-1 with a strikeout. It was nice having Julio Rodriguez mic'd up during the game. He was asked about their turnaround in the last month or so.
I just played my confidence, honestly. I feel like getting a little bit more confident because of the fact that I'm here right now playing against a lot of guys that I look up to. It was pretty surreal at that moment, but after that, I feel like I thought that I deserved it here, that it was not just because that I was here, that there was a reason. So after I realized that, I feel like that's why I was able to play my game.
Yeah, pretty magnetic dude. You heard Jeff Passan say in the last hour that everybody just wants to be around him. Pretty impressive when you're in that company at the All-Star game. Hopefully he'll get a little bit of rest along with Ty France before the team gets back underway on Friday, Houston coming to town. I know non-baseball fans are always talking about ways to improve the game, right? Everyone wants to fix baseball or whatever the case may be. I thought baseball showed exactly what it needs to do in order to quote-unquote fix itself. They need more guys mic'd up.
They say I'm not good against lefties. How ironic I get two in here, huh?
First time you faced Acuna?
First time, yeah. Hey, what's up, bro? I'm thinking the slider too, but I think if I execute a good heater up.
Yeah?
He's seen the sinker twice. Something that stays true. might throw him off a little bit.
That was Alec Manoah. From the Blue Jays, who, first of all, was a really good pitcher. Second of all, was great mic'd up. But he wasn't the only one. Baseball is a complex game. And getting to understand the thought process behind what guys are doing and the strategy that they're using out there, I think is much more important than any of the, you know, little tricks like home run derbies to finish off games or, you know, putting a runner on second base in the extra innings. Just allow people to understand what's going on and trust them to enjoy it at that point.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, it is not every year that the talk of the All-Star break is all about one of the game's best players possibly being on the move, but that's kind of where we're at this year with Juan Soto. Scott Boras, his agent, watching behind home plate yesterday. Here in Seattle, it's got to be a legitimate conversation because they're one of the teams that's got enough capital to make a deal with the Nationals. What would it take? Well, we just heard a package put together by Jeff Passan as an idea. Buster Olney thinks that something's going to get done.
There's a perception that Soto is going to get traded, that the Nationals are have incentive at this point to move him, in part because of their ownership transfer. The team has been up for sale, and one source told me that the incoming owners have made it clear they want this situation resolved one way or the other. Either they want him signed, and as you mentioned, they offered him the $440 million. It would be a record-setting deal over 15 years, or they want him traded.
Well, the Mariners should absolutely be in this conversation. This is a dude being compared to Ted Williams and Babe Ruth, and it's not even a real exaggeration. So, yeah, it's worth exploring. Should they do it? Can't answer it without knowing what the ask is. I sure wouldn't want them to give up much from their major league roster, but they should be trying hard. They've got a great farm system. They have some really desirable prospects, and if you can use those to acquire a player of this caliber, that's something they got to look real hard at.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of NFL notes here as we will talk to Jamie Erdahl in about 10 minutes. Pro Football Talk reporting, the Browns privately bracing for an 8-game suspension of Deshaun Watson. That would be, in my opinion, meager. Not enough. Not even half a season. The bar's been set here. Major League Baseball suspended Trevor Bauer for 2 full years. 8 games? That would be paltry at best. The article also notes that Cam Newton could be an option in Cleveland, either to back up or maybe in place of Jacoby Brissett. If that were to happen, Jimmy Garoppolo's not going there, so where does he go? Ian Rappaport says he will be fully cleared by the middle of August, so that's coming up sooner rather than later. I also really like this. This was on Bump and Stacey yesterday. Cardinals beat writer Josh Weinfuss from ESPN talking about the future of their coaching staff.
I mean, if they bought him out for the third straight year, this isn't a fluke. This is a trend at this point. I think at that point, the organization needs to look at why is this happening, and that all comes back to the head coach. So if that happens, we might see some changes, but I don't know if this roster can handle the best of the best of the league. And like you said, those first 3 games, that's a gauntlet right there. And I think that could set the pace early on. I mean, obviously DeAndre Hopkins changes everything, but at least for the first 6 weeks, those three games could kind of set the temperature for what we're going to see out of the Cardinals this year.
Yeah, I would have fired Cliff Kingsbury last year. So they got to find out whether or not Cliff Kingsbury's the problem or whether or not the quarterback's the problem. And I don't know how you determine on Kyler Murray without seeing him with another coach, figure out which guy you want around. You can always find another Cliff Kingsbury. It's everything you need to know. We do that quarter past every hour here on the Mike Salk Show. Did you get some good suggestions so far for awards tomorrow?
We got some good ones coming in.
Good. All right. 206-421-3776. You can text those there. That's the Mac and Jack's.
That's Mid-Season Mariner Awards.
Yeah. All right. And we've got a bunch that we've already put together, and you guys can add to it.
Boar and I were talking during the break, too, Need to Know about some of the other fun stuff that you might have missed since you were catching up on the All-Star game after the concert you went to.
Yes.
Did you see when Julio was mic'd up and Liam Hendricks was pitching for the White Sox? He was kind of dogging on himself a little bit. It's like, it's cool being around all these pitchers that are better than me and stuff. But did you see when he got the out, when Julio caught the final?
Yeah, I saw that later. Yes, I did see that.
He only got to face one batter, so he wanted that ball.
Oh, I didn't realize that part of it. Yeah. Okay, so that was the only out he got. Yeah, do we have the sound? I think I have. Here it is. Here he is. Here's Liam Hendricks with Julio.
Fly to center field. Julio's got it. Come on! There you go, Liam.
Don't throw the ball away! Julio! Oh, Leon! Give me the ball! Give me the ball! I need to keep it.
That might be our new Julio.
I was just thinking that. Yeah,
our Julio's poor messing with him like he's going to throw it in the crowd.
It's too bad Liam Hendricks didn't know the Julio sound, the Frozen song. Julio.
Yes, yeah,
Julio.
True.
If only he had known.
This one's a little more frantic.
Made him likable. I never really liked Liam Hendricks until that.
Moore, are you going to be singing Frozen at 9 o'clock? What are you singing at 9? I'm still desperately waiting.
Just mind your business.
What do you mean, mind my business?
You made it our business.
You're the one who said that if they won 10 games, you'd sing, and now they've won 14, and you owe us four songs. So that starts today
you
at
came
9
up
o'clock.
With four.
I didn't. I mean, it's just four more than 10. Yeah, that's just math. I mean, I didn't create
math
or anything. It's just arithmetic.
I don't participate in math.
Jamie Erdahl, join us next. She's new host of Good Morning Football. She is great, and we'll talk a little football with her before Maura sings at 9 o'clock. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Yeah, this hour is driven by Wayscar Ford. Excited about this. We've been talking a ton of baseball today, and we'll come back to it as well. But we're, what, just over a week away from training camp? I mean, like, we're on the verge, basically. And Jamie Erdahl, who has been with CBS for the last few years, has been doing SEC games there as a sideline reporter, is going to be the new host of Good Morning Football, which is a really cool gig, fun show. And Jamie is awesome, and she's kind enough to take a few minutes and join us now. Good morning, Jamie. How are you?
Hi, folks. I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. It's been forever. I was telling people earlier that we were at that audition together years ago at Nesson. You got the gig. I did not because I'm not really a TV person, but there was a tremendous amount of talent at that whatever it was, audition,
I guess. Isn't that so true? Whenever I see Amanda Baglione, yep, who, if anyone's a golf fan, she was in that room. Like, we joke now that was like a Hunger Games audition room for like sports television. And it's so incredible. Actually, frankly, I don't know how that didn't become like a reality show, because, and I'm sure I'll forget some people, but you know, it was you and I, Amanda Baglionis, Jamison Coyle, who's yep, at NHL Network now, and Leah Hextall, who's becoming one of the preeminent voices on the NHL. Oh my gosh, I'm forgetting some, but it was just, L. Duncan, who we see all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy what that room became, and you know, and then you and I get to chat 10 years later. It's
I know.
Pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, and I'm just a lowly radio guy still trying to make my way in the world. They didn't want my face on TV. They knew I was going to gain 30 pounds eventually. So Jamie, you're doing great. What, tell me about the new show. I mean, you're coming into something that's established. What are you going to be bringing to Good Morning Football?
Yeah, so what a cool show. I mean, you know, we all watch it. It brings just something really fun and creative and fresh to the NFL every morning, which I think is important for football and for the sport. You know, the NFL is one of those rare oddities that you can talk about it year-round. It's kind of created itself to become that kind of monster, and then you get a show like this, which is awesome. Obviously, I'm replacing Kay Adams, who had been on it for 6 years since its inception, and she did a fantastic job. But now I get to step in and work with Kyle Brandt and Pete Schrager, and like, they're unbelievable creative television brains, and they have these fantastic segments, and I just cannot wait to get started and, you know, for the first time in a long time, be able to share a football opinion here and there, which I really didn't get to do on the sideline for a while.
Well, are you still going to be doing, I saw you're still sort of staying with CBS. Are you going to be doing any more sideline, or is that part done?
No, I won't. You know, the FEC, I've handed off the reins to Jenny Dell, who will take over for the FEC. But we're hoping to still be able to work together. You know, there's an all-women sports talk show that CBS does once a month called We Need to Talk. I'm hoping I could still be a part of that. And, you know, maybe some basketball conversations in the future. But I just think it was such a great gesture for them to allow me to move on in this capacity. And so we just didn't want the relationship to end right there.
Very cool. So what are the biggest storylines as you start thinking about this upcoming football season, which basically gets going next week? What are the biggest storylines across the NFL that you think you'll be focusing on?
Well, you know, with the show being in New York, it's been a tough go for any team that has New York in front of its name, I guess, in the NFL. So love to see one of those guys step up in that market. I think it just kind of makes the league better when the Jets or the Giants have something to hang their hat on. So would love to see one of these draft classes really make an impact for one of those teams. Quarterbacks always drive the conversation. You guys sit in a very unique situation in Seattle. And I covered Drew Lock when he was at Missouri. I had a couple of his games, and I was super impressed with that young man. It was, you know, Missouri is one of these schools that, truth be told, you know, we don't pick that game a lot, you know, for the Missouri Tigers to play on the SEC and CBS game of the week. But when the one time I did come across him, or the first time, I was really impressed with how smart he is. And I think he was handed a bit of a tough go in Denver. And I know what, you know, when the headline comes, if you're not like a true dedicated NFL fan, maybe the trade seemed lopsided to some, but I think he needed a fresh start, and I'm super intrigued to see what happens for him in Seattle.
Right, so tell me a little bit more about that, because obviously we've had a lot of talks about him and Geno Smith, and I've kind of been of the belief that I thought Pete was going to make another move. I thought Baker was coming. I still am half convinced yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to end up here. But if but if that doesn't end up happening, and it is Drew Lock, you know, you mentioned that he's a smart guy. What makes you say that, and what do you think he could be capable of as a quarterback given another shot?
Well, you know, for better or for worse, that position is one that, you know, those young men need to have magnetic personalities, in my opinion. You know, you have to want to be followed. And I think he is that guy. You know, some viral clips that we saw of Drew Lock come out of Denver kind of showed his personality and his likability amongst his teammates. And I think the football will come in the best scenario for anybody. And I actually think he is a candidate that qualifies for that. I can't really think of many others than Pete Carroll who might be able, with his experience in the league and just with putting success forward for any player at any position, let alone a quarterback, just to show Drew Lock the leadership that he might need, what it takes to win. You know, Pete Carroll has that in his back pocket. So I'm excited for him. I really, really liked him when he was in the SEC. I didn't get to watch a ton of him when he was in Denver. I only read the headlines, which looked frustrating. You know, and I covered Geno Smith when he was with the Jets. But, you know, from what I read, it's tough to hang your hat for an organization on a 32-year-old quarterback. You know, what direction do they want to go in? And I think, you know, a lot is going to come out in training camp, but you know, you really, I know Drew Lock a little bit better than I know Geno Smith, and I just was really impressed with him as a person.
What do you think Russ does this year in Denver? Do you think he has a crazy great year? Do you think he, you know, did they play well, but the division is just too good? I mean, what do you think happens there?
Yeah, the division is really challenging. I mean, there's no way around that. It's not even just one team that's really challenging. It is across the board. I think every team got better in the AFC West. And again, like to come back to the SEC, I hate to do that, but it's like all I know at this point. The last 4 years, Jerry Jeudy is an excellent wide receiver. And mm-hmm. So you know, who was throwing to him over the last couple of years? There was no real consistency with whose hand the ball was coming from for Jerry Jeudy to really thrive. So curious about that. You know, I think for Russell Wilson, did he need a bit of an identity shift and, you know, go to a different market, and he, you know, can put his roots down there now? I know you probably guys don't want to hear it or see it. I don't know what the sentiment is there, but, you know, I'm most curious about Russell Wilson to Jerry Jeudy and what that looks like.
Yeah, we're, think of the most bitter ex you could imagine. That's us. It's certainly me. I mean, like, I mean, I'm as bitter an ex as you could find. I mean, and I loved sure. Russ. I mean,
That's the Boston in you, man.
Yeah, it is. That's fair. Yeah, I mean, that's true. There is still a little of that left over. But Brock and I, you know, when we were doing the show and Russ first showed up, we were so all in on him. And, you know, even before yeah. they drafted him, we were excited about Russ. And the last couple of years, he's a weird dude. I mean, he really is a different guy. And it has felt the last few years, it's just all felt kind of forced. And I am actually excited for the future. I don't know whether Drew or Geno will end up being the long-term quarterback here, but I'm excited for the next step for the Seahawks.
You certainly have a lot of pieces to be excited about beyond the quarterback position, and maybe that's just the thing you focus on this year, and maybe the quarterback thing will figure itself out.
You, with your time in the SEC, you know, you mentioned some of the guys you got to know. Who do you think was the best player, and who was the best interview you spoke to in that conference during your time there?
I think everyone this year needs to turn on their television on any given Saturday this fall to see Will Anderson at Alabama play. Mm. That young man is a life-changing defensive player. I cannot wait to see his trajectory in the NFL. That being said, his charisma and his intelligence and his, he will change an organization. I will put my money on that. Wherever he goes, he will, an entire market, if not the league, will fall in love with him. He is just tremendous, a tremendous talent and a person. So, it, you know, I saw a lot of great players come through, but I'm most excited about what he can do in his time as a pro. My favorite interview is, well, I have to go with the one that I probably had to deal with the most, and I hate to say in Tuscaloosa, but, you know, Nick Saban can give a pretty good interview time and time again, and it doesn't even have to be like a great situation that he finds himself in. He's a pretty good interview when he's crabby because they're losing. So it's it was really cool just to be around that organization just because of how many players turn pro and the way he runs his team. And it was pretty special to watch that so closely for 4 years.
I really like Nick Saban. I'm with you on that. I'm glad to hear you say that and that he was good to deal with. I find him to be a really compelling and fascinating figure. And I don't say that a lot about college coaches because I think many of them are egomaniacal in sort of a harmful way. And I never get that. He's obviously got a huge ego. I grant that. And he deserves it with what he's accomplished. But I find him very compelling.
I really was fascinated just with how methodical he goes about everything and intentional he is about everything he does in his day, throughout his day. On Thursdays, he does a coach's show leading into a game weekend, and he invites a media member to come and be a part of it, just, you know, to ask the questions and be a part of the conversation. So I got to do it a couple times. And I remember sitting next to him, and he has this piece of paper, and he's got just, you know, words or phrases, you know, 7 to 8 things, and we would, you couldn't tell what we were going to talk about, but somehow in this hour-long coaches show, he would incorporate things that he wanted as part of his messaging that week. And I thought that to be an incredible skill and such a purposeful way to go about, because he knows that his players hang off of every word that he says. You know, the parents, the people part of the team, you know, scouts looking and what they say, of what he says about his players that they're looking at for the NFL. And I just sat there and I was so amazed at that dedication to his messaging. I thought that was really cool.
Jamie, great stuff. Good to catch up with you. Congratulations. It's a really, really cool gig. It's a great show and you'll be great on it. We're looking forward to it. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
All right, there you go. There's Jamie Erdahl, and she'll make her debut Monday, July 25th. So that's this coming Monday. Jamie will be taking over, as she said, for Kay Adams on Good Morning Football, and she is delightful. I really, one of the nicer people I've come across in the business. And, I've told people before, anyone who knows any of my story knows that the year I spent back in Boston in 2013 did not go well. I've talked about it any number of times. This isn't new. I was in a bad situation and I didn't handle it very well. I made a lot of mistakes. The situation was screwy. I was told some things that didn't end up being true. And also, I didn't handle it very well either. And I've had to kind of deal with that and live with that. A lot of the people I met there, I really didn't like. Some of the people I met there, I just thought were delightful. And Jamie is definitely in the second category. Good. She's a really nice person, incredibly talented. And she's right. I mean, it's been kind of fun to watch that group that was at this sort of Hunger Games style audition. So we all went to Nesson is like their Root Sports, right? Owned by the Red Sox and the Bruins are on. Both Red Sox and Bruins are on there. And this was before I had taken the job at WEEI, but I knew I was going to be going there. And so I thought that I might be. And so I went back for this audition to see if there was a way to incorporate some TV in it. And as she said, the people there were like really impressive. They ended up going on to some really great things. Amanda Balionis, who is the does all the interviews, the walk-off interviews for CBS for all the PGA and all the big golf events. She just said Leah Hextall, who was calling games. We had her on the show for ESPN. She's one of the best hockey voices in the media right now. Jameson Coyle, who's a really nice guy as well, who's now at NHL Network, and me and Jamie. And yeah, I think Al Duncan was there. And, Jenny Dell was already working at Nesson at the time, so she wasn't there. But it was like they kept putting us in all these different combos and, you know, some things were highlights and then it was opinion. Of course, I've never done a highlight in my life, so I'm terrible. And they knew that. They knew I didn't know how to do any of that stuff, but they were like, all right, you'll bring some opinion and some of that. And I ended up doing a bunch of work with Nesson after that, just not as a sort of a full-time person. And Anyway, it was great. And she got the job and was really, really good and has since moved on, obviously, and had great success.
Yeah, so. Sounds great. And I love that show. I love Kay Adams. She sounds great, and I'm very happy to see
the
next iteration of it.
It's a fun take, right? Isn't that what people like about it? It doesn't take itself so seriously.
Yep. Yep, it is. It's softer. It's more approachable.
Yeah.
It's far more personality and entertainment than it is hard-hitting, hot-take stuff. It's great.
Well, they like some of the drama, and I'm into some of the drama, as we've talked about, and kind of what will come across our desk during the course of football. When do they actually report? It's next week, for God's sakes, right?
27th, right?
I keep thinking it's farther off than that, and I don't know, for whatever reason, maybe this happens every year, but it feels even more so this year. Maybe just because of like how completely engrossed I am in what's going on with the Mariners right now, it is hard for me to fathom that the NFL is right around the corner.
Oh, and the fact that like it feels more, and I was just saying this yesterday, we're like, oh my God, it's the 20th? July's almost over?
Right.
It's just that fact of we didn't have that early summer vibe to make it feel like it was about time.
Are you ready
they
for the NFL?
They report on Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Oh, man.
Tuesday? 26th. What Tuesday? Tuesday in a few weeks?
July 26th.
That can't be true.
I knew it was a week from yesterday.
I legitimately don't believe you.
Okay.
Fine.
I think you're lying to me here on the air. Tuesday? That can't be real. Well, I guess it is. So Tuesday, this is all going to start, really happening. So Brock was giving me his top six most important players for the Seahawks this year. So this is on the podcast, which I think is coming out today, even though we recorded it yesterday. I don't think it went up yesterday. But I'll give you a little sneak peek. You want to know what Brock's top six most important players were?
Let's hear it.
Well, tell me, who do you think would need to be on that list?
DK and Quandre.
DK was on the list. Quandre Diggs was not on his list.
What?
No, I know. Shocking, right?
Ken Walker.
Ken Walker was number six on his list, okay. Yes.
I guess from needing what you originally thought you were going to get out of him, I would say Jamal Adams.
He was number one on my list. I think Jamal Adams could be the number one most important person on the team this year. Brock did not have him in the top six.
Boye Mafe?
Nope. Here's Brock's list.
What?
Number six was Walker. Number five, Jordan Brooks. Totally agree with that one. Jordan Brooks taking over for Bobby, calling the signals. He's got to be mature. He's got to understand the defense. He's got to not get caught. He's got to not get fooled. He's got to be smart. There's a lot wrong.
This
is a first-round pick that they, essentially drafted to eventually replace Bobby. There's a lot riding on the development of Jordan Brooks this year. I agree with that one 100%. I agree with this one, too, Derek Taylor, right? I mean, that is your pass rush. Daryl. Did I say Derek?
Yes,
Daryl. Sorry, Daryl Taylor. You don't know who Derek Taylor is?
We've heard of him.
That's a friend of mine. We went to middle school together.
No, yeah, of course you
did. I'm just kidding. Daryl Taylor.
Remember a square dancing partner.
Who's Derek Taylor? Daryl Taylor.
Derek Coleman or something?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Combining those?
DC. Yeah. Daryl Taylor. That's your pass rush.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you can say what you want about Boye Mafe. He's a rookie. Like, I don't expect that much out of a rookie at that position. You need Daryl Taylor to be a force to change the game with your new aggressive style and everything else. I'm with Brock 100%. Daryl Taylor has to be on that list.
Those are 5 and 4 then, pass rush.
That was 5 and 4.
Oh, no, sorry, linebacker.
Number three, he said Charles Cross.
Mm.
And I disagree with this one. I don't know that I would have had Cross in my list. I get that he's your, you've invested all of this capital in him as a first round rookie, et cetera. And Brock was making the point of, well, a left tackle is, so important to your offensive line. And all I could think of is they've kind of had that position down for most of Russ's time here. And their line still wasn't very good. I mean, first Russell Okung and then Dwayne Brown. And like those guys were good. The offensive line still wasn't good. So, yeah, you need him to be good. I mean, look, you could say that about any position on the field, right? But I don't know that he would have made my top five or six list. DK, Brock had obviously number two. I swear to you, I am not exaggerating or making this up even a little bit. When he told me Drew Lock was the number one person, most important person on his list, yeah. I legitimately and honestly thought he was making a joke. I thought he was like, aha, and then he was going to give me Jamal Adams.
Yeah.
Okay, huh, funny. Okay, Drew Lock. Wait, you're serious? And that's his view.
Okay. Did you have your list as well, or is this just his?
This was just his. Mine, off the cuff, probably wouldn't be that different. There are a few other names that I probably would have thrown in instead. Obviously, Jamal Adams would have been, I have him really high on my list. But I'm just, as I said, wired to love Jamal Adams and really the style he plays. You know, I think you could make some other arguments for guys. You know, one thing that stands out to me that's not on this list is your defensive tackle spot, your whole defensive line. It just, there doesn't seem to be much of an emphasis there. And so, yeah, I kind of look at that and say it's maybe troubling that there's no one on that list stepping up into being on your most important group. But, yeah, Jamal Adams would be the one name that really jumps out to me. I will say this, you know, we're getting close to, like, time to believe in Drew and Geno time, right? What I thought was going to happen doesn't seem like it's going to happen. I hear from Brock that Drew is the most important Seahawk. I hear from my friends in Chicago that it's easy to, you know, just start loving whatever you've got. We hear there from Jamie Erdahl, who covered Drew Locke a little bit in college and said, oh my God, I was really impressed with his intelligence and his personality and his magnetism. All right. So I'm starting to, like, carve together some belief here. Obviously, he's got a good arm. I mean, no one doubts the arm. He has the ability to throw the ball down the field. It's just a matter of whether he can put all those things together, right? Can his charisma turn into leadership? I think that's a real question.
Yeah, in a very short time.
Can his intelligence turn into on-field decision-making? We haven't really seen that yet. Can his big arm turn into completed passes and accuracy down the field rather than inaccuracy or interceptions? I mean, you're talking about three things that are listed as a strength that so far have not been that for him in his career. So can he take those three issues, those three strengths, and make them that, right?
In the next month or so.
Yeah, like right. Stat.
Very
right?
Stat.
I mean, like immediately. Look, they're going to show up here on Tuesday, right? You know, I'll give you my five storylines. I don't know, we'll probably do that Monday or Tuesday next week as we get ready. I love doing my biggest storylines heading into training camp. Obviously, the quarterback spot is going to be one of them, but the first thing I'm going to be looking at when I get to training camp, practice number one. You know, a couple of years ago, we asked Brock this question, what's the first thing your eyes are going to go to when you're out there? You know what his answer was? Jamarco Jones, worst answer he's ever given in all of his years on the radio. Jamarco Jones being the first thing he was looking at is probably the worst answer Brock's ever given, other than Drew Locke number one. The first thing I'm going to be looking at is
splits.
Who's taking some reps at quarterback? Are they going to be splitting reps? Is Geno still your starting quarterback the way he was in everything we saw during minicamp and OTAs? Or is this a real competition? Or is Drew past him? Are they going to go with what everybody else thinks they're going to do, which is give Drew Locke the keys to the car and see if he can drive? Yeah, I that will be the very first spot my mind goes or my eyes go. You got to find out, right? What are they going to do? How real is this competition?
Because in OTAs, it was
the Geno
clear.
Show.
It was pretty clear.
It was the Geno Show.
Yeah,
he was the starter. Drew was the backup. He was the starter. Drew was the backup. Is that what it's going to be like when we get out to training camp next week? I don't think so. I really don't. I it's hard for me to imagine that would be the case, right? If that is the case, I will come in here Wednesday with, you know, a shrug emoji. Just stuck here on the table.
We'll have one ready to go.
That'll be me if you're watching. Just a big old shrug emoji. I won't understand it. I will not understand what that means.
We got a text in. When's the podcast come out then? You're Brock?
Heck, I don't know. Tonight, okay. I guess. 6 o'clock, maybe? I thought it was going to come out yesterday. So I guess it's coming out tonight, normal time. So usually that's around 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Paul, you just subscribe to the thing. It'll just show up on your phone. That way you don't have to know when it's coming out. It just shows up.
Hear that, 206?
Yeah, wait, come on. Just subscribe.
Use the application on your phone.
Don't forget to like and follow.
Smash that like button.
Smash that like button. All right, when we come back, more will sing. It's the Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710.